reducting the bridges. So it is.
And without expansion to a fifth.
Right. Well, see.
But we would have that number at 30%.
Sure. Yes.
Right.
And that's what we really need to get out of these, you know, experts who are going to help us analyze all the different elements and do the prioritization and costing, and so that we can bring forward, you know, what we think is the best thing to do. I think the central tri, so the whole system started out with two lanes in each direction. The central tri is the area that starts presenting the next future, the next need that's coming. So it's like it was the first section to be widened to 3. It's the first section to be widened to 4. So now the reason why this corridor is so important is because what are we going to do now that we've maxed out the right-of-way with the 4 lanes? How do we try to maximize what we get out of this investment we're putting in there? It's going to set the stage for maybe what we do on other portions of the system in the next, you know, 70 years or whatever.
And it'll be interesting to see how, you know, the ATM on I-90 works out for us, right? Because that's also a way that we think we'll leverage more capacity out of that footprint. So, you know, we might, you know, see a need to add some additional technology features here too.
So what, as you're going through this evaluation process and you're taking a look at what the corridor needs are, what year's traffic projections, what do we use as our
20-year horizon, what's out there in the next 20 years? Okay. That's typically what we do. You always look 20 years out. What's the demand? We know, I mean, there's going to be demand, but then you'll say, okay, well, how long will certain, how long if you put in 5 lanes out there?
If you look back in hindsight at projections based on the lane, you know, configuration we have now, what did they miss? Did they miss the explosion in warehousing and freight logistics that we see in our area? You know, because a lot of this is the movement of containers in the area is incredible.
The last time we did major work out here, I believe, was in the
early 90s.
Yeah, so that's the 20-year traffic projection. You know, it's what you're basically there now. You've already passed that 20-year horizon.
And were we close?
It would be good to go back and look to see how close we were on that. Typically, what we see, you know, it's you put a lane in there, there's so much demand through the system, and, you know, this is somewhat anecdotal, but you see it. I think 88 is a perfect example of it. Within 10 years, you start seeing that levels of congestion start getting back in, because it's not just about, we're providing some additional capacity, but all those other roads start getting filled up too, and people need somewhere to go, and that's, you know, so about 10 years is that time frame where these roads start getting back to some levels of congestion. And that's why I get, you know, this has been a point that you brought up, one, that active traffic management. What can you do to at least manage that demand, you know, in the peak time? We know in the tri-state, too.
You got to do something to leverage more out of the event, because there just isn't the capacity, you know, maybe add another lane, or, you know, maybe we'll have the ability to do that, but you're not going to be, you know, 6-7 lanes in each direction. I mean, that's just not...
It's not feasible.
We're not Atlanta.
No, we're
not. Not a green field.
Well, and it's very... The traffic here is definitely in a direction during the peak time. There's no doubt about it. Morning, it's actually growing, because I know you've noticed it's growing now in the southbound direction. I think that, you know, we're trying to figure out, okay, why is it we're seeing so much?
The economy had a lot to do with it, right? So, we had a 5-year depression, basically, and we're coming out of it now. And, you know,
you're starting to notice what maybe would have been there 5 years ago run into the recession.
Right, but that could start to accelerate even quicker than it would have normally done.
Yes.
So, Rocco, can you utilize shifting lanes? Or is this just so massive?
Shifting as in, like, reversible lanes?
Right.
Or
so that you have a northbound, a morning time northbound lane that it would almost...
Additional lane down the center?
I'm wondering. I mean, or is that because the traffic volumes are so significant that that's just moving too much?
Those are things that, you know, definitely are contemplated. Can we do things like that? What are the impacts of doing something like that? What are the operations associated with doing a reversible or something like that? that's part of what we'll start looking at.
And the Texas, I think it was, did Houston put express lanes in for traffic on their expansion?
I-10? Is that, I think, is
yeah.
that?
You mean the managed, like managed lanes?
Managed expansion lanes. There's no exit, there's no, it's just you get out here and you cut through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think.
And I think they decked it. I was remembering. Okay. I was down there. And
so it's
like a center deck and use this express.
Elevated?
Or kind of with your reversible lane, but it's you know, one in each direction going. Or you reverse it.
I think Houston's the one who has the left hand off ramp, right? They've got the left hand off ramps to go into. There's possibilities. There's but,
that's
you know,
a budget buster.
That's a, right, that's what I was going to say. Couldn't even get the words out of my mouth.
A bridge for the entire length, elevated lane for the entire length.
If it can be engineered, it could be built.
And are there more? Are there other effective ways of dealing with the issue? But you know, certainly a you know express lane type concept may be reversible.
And I think that's why we've been focusing, and that's why we're so
really gonna get it right.
Looking forward to seeing how 90 works, because it actually makes use of the shoulder. So it's something we're already taking up space. And, you know, could we use it during the peak periods, or can we get more, you know, benefit out of something we already have in there? So, like, the reversible lanes option, I think, is an interesting one, but when I think of that, I think that's another set of shoulders that's doing nothing for me, right? So, it just makes the footprint wider and wider, and we're trying to...
I don't know that those reversibles have shoulders, but you're right.
Yeah, it's...
Taking up space. Maybe there's a better way to use it. But, it, you know, something can be evaluated. That's why it's good that we're doing this.
What percent of the traffic and peak hours on this corridor are freight? Just the pricing for trucks just keeps going back to make sense, right?
I don't know. Let me see if I have it from the last one. I believe it was around the 20-some-odd percent. Oh, during the peak time?
Yeah, peak time.
Yeah, it's usually about that in that corridor. This is a very high demand. I don't have the old presentation.
So it's consistent irrespective of the time? That 20% number spans?
Well, so what happens with some of the freight, and this is another thing that we're kind of, I wish I had all the numbers in front of me, is there's already incentive for a lot of these trucking companies to avoid that congested point the time of day anyway, because they're just stuck losing money waiting in traffic. So you do see more of the trucks really already taking advantage of that midday, or you know, after 10
not
o'clock.
Not because of pricing, but just other
pricing.
Economic factors.
Yeah, they don't want to sit in traffic. Where, so from the freight perspective, I think what we, I know what we see, and if you drive out there, you see it plenty. At the trucks wait. They just wait it out. If you're anywhere near that Hinsdale Oasis,
it's packed
up. So the trucks are waiting at the Hinsdale Oasis and on the ramps to the Hinsdale Oasis, on the ramps to everywhere they could possibly go or sit, waiting for either one of two things, the congestion to kind of start diminishing, or waiting for the call from the loading dock to say, okay, come take your, the dock will be open in 20 minutes, come on, and you can start moving it now. So it frees up some space locally as well. So that's, I think there's some need for really looking at digging into the freight issues on this, and maybe it's a parking or what kind of accommodations are necessary to make this more of a freight.
And we have the parking on this month's board agenda. We have the study on additional freight parking.
Well, do you know how much of that truck traffic then is generated south of 55?
So what we have, again, yes, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but what we're very fortunate to have a tremendous amount of data coming from our toll plazas. So what we know is how many of these trucks are actually through trip. Because we can find out who's entered the system from I-80 areas, which is the 163rd Street toll plaza, or the I-80 toll plazas, and how many of those go through each one of our mainline toll plazas. So we could see, we're not looking at truck by truck, but we can kind of do the pairs to see how many of those trucks go from I-80 all the way to Wisconsin. So we do have some abilities to really look at the data to find out how many of these are through trips, or how many are getting off at 290, or getting off, I mean, because we have the advantage where we've got these mainline
toll plazas.
Well,
we're seeing some major development on the north, the Wisconsin side of the border. The Amazon facility is going to be up there, and that's going to have to add a lot of truck traffic, I'm going to assume, as well, which is all through traffic.
Or drone traffic.
Right. It was about, I think it was about a third of the trips, of all the trips are through trips, which is a pretty significant number.
Well, then again, parking facilities that are located maybe just north of 80, so that you catch them coming off 80 foot and the same thing north.
Mm-hmm. So I know Director Wisner's really been pushing for this and was kind of pushing on as we take a look at these areas for trucks to get off of the tollway and the parking areas. And a lot of the discussion, at least up until now, has been, you know, kind of through that central corridor. But I'm wondering if this is really a focus, you know, looking at the two ends prior to entering, if we can capture some of that in some of those other areas where it might not be as congested or, you know, land locked, that if we can take advantage of that and if these trucks are going to utilize that, you know, off-peak hours, that might not be a better way to
expand
that view.
Yeah, it's definitely something we'll express mm-hmm. to the consultant that, again, assuming that it's approved at the board meeting, you know, we'll have shortly a consultant on board who's going to be looking at that issue, and we'll make sure that that's one of the things on there. Radar.
How much would mass transit take pressure off this corridor, or is there really is it an east-west and then a north-south demand there?
The demand from the north-south is really coming from, I believe it's that Harvey Terminal, and there I believe it's 95th, whatever, just a little east of the tollway, and up to, you know, it's getting people the job. The big job areas, no offense, but it's Oak Brook and Rosemont. That's where all the jobs are along this corridor. You know, that's no surprise. So there is, there are routes today that run from really Harvey and then even the UPS facility connecting to the north-south. So, but and Metro handles the east-west. We have tried partnering with Pace in the past on some new north-south transit service. Wasn't overly successful. Maybe there's opportunities now where there's, if we take the I-90 vision, where there's some transit benefit to do. And I think when we tried to partner with Pace in the past, it was during that recession. It didn't really, nothing was taking off at that point in time.
So there are no Pace buses running our route right now, this Central Tri-State route.
There's some Pace buses, yeah. It's serving the UPS facility and up to the Rosemont area. There are some, but it's just interspersed with traffic, waiting in traffic just like everybody else.
I mean, you're talking like that, like for project on I-90?
I-90, yeah.
With the BTR.
BRT.
That's definitely something we'll be doing is assessing the transit market. What's the demand out here, and how much of that can you really slice off of the congestion through that?
Or similarly, as you said, you know, can you do something with the shoulders? So maybe it's not, maybe the market isn't such that you would want or need a dedicated lane, but maybe it's something that's flexible that provides for more consistent through trip for transit, but also could be used for the, you know, additional traffic need. So, but lots to consider, and you know, as you can see already, a lot of thought has gone into it, and I think we've gotten a lot of great feedback today. And don't, you know, obviously if you have any other thoughts, this is going to be a multi-year process, so we'll expect to come back to you all, you know, in the months and years to come on this. So Rockland's done a very nice job. Thank you. I think the next presentation is really a follow-up.
Just one comment and one question. I guess to Christy's point, you run a great process here. You have the blueprint. I think you have the right scope. I particularly like, the right discussion around the, you know, kind of incorporating what you've already done on the Jane Addams, seeing how some of that's going to work, you know, the ATM system, obviously. I think you have the right discussion topics for the council, particularly one of my favorites. I know Director Wisner as well. I love the environmental sustainability piece. But I think my favorite is when you talk about stakeholder engagement. I mean, you have to. I love that approach. I think that's the right approach to getting that feedback. My only question is, as you're assembling this group, I guess in terms of expectations, and I heard you say vision, mm-hmm. kind of taking the vision to the consultants. They understand that the expectations is that, does that manifest itself in some form of recommendations that are kind of here are our recommendations.
A report of some type.
And it's in, those things are incorporated into the plan, so that those folks will see that the work that we've kind of done here is incorporated into the master plan.
That's exactly. So this is exactly what we've done on I-90. It ends with a report. It's a report from the council to the tollway board, where they take it. See, yes, we adopted. This is what we want our council recommendations to be. So it's a very clear recommendation. Where the success was on I-90, it's really nice to see. And I still see all the people that were on the council. If you look at the report that was done on I-90, that's what we're building. So, and I think that's how you get people understanding that, we're not just sitting around the table to talk. The fun thing about working with this agency is, well, there's so many fun things about working with this agency, but the particularly fun thing is that you're dealing with funded projects, which is kind of nice. You know, people understand.
You, Paul.
Yes. Right. Fun. Uncle Fun is what we call that. You got funded projects, so people understand when they're sitting at the table with one of our councils that this is your... Something is going to get built.
Sure.
That's their opportunity to participate and engage in the process. And we've seen that with I-90. We've seen it with the Elgin O'Hare project, where you're going, this is real.
It's certainly best practice. So
yeah.
I love that approach.
So it'll come with a report. It'll be the recommendations from the council to the board. And that's how we really kind of start using that.
Gotcha.
It's not to say everything gets done as part of the vision, but it's like this is where we need to be as an agency.
Yeah. Good. Thank you. So the next presentation is really a follow-up to, I think, a previous discussion or a couple discussions that we've had, actually, which is this excess right-of-way policy, excess right-of-way and annexation policy, which also Rocco and his group have been working on. We do, have a right-of-way that obviously we acquire because of projects or work that we do, and ultimately sometimes don't need all of it, and wanted to create a policy with some expectations for the general public, communities, etc., who might be interested in some of that or other annexation or other issues related to crossing our right-of-way. Wanted to create a better public understanding of what they can expect and a policy for how to deal with it. And I know we heard from all of you that we should maintain some flexibility, prioritize economic development. There was a lot of good feedback from our last discussion. And I think we wanted to just summarize the public comments that we received. I think we had a 60-day comment period on this one, right? Just to provide enough time, because we thought we'd get some formal comments from communities. And sometimes the hierarchy and structure there, it takes a little longer for those to work themselves through the process, and we didn't want to miss out on that. So again, Rocco and his team have done a nice job, and we thought he could walk through some of what we've heard there.
So this is not going to be about action today. It's just going to give you the update about what we have heard. So I'll just give you some of the summary of the comments, some of the policy issues that maybe have a discussion on, and some of the next steps. So the policy, I want to tell you a little again about how we approach the outreach, and we're still getting approached on possible getting some more additional comments from other communities, so some may still trickle in. So what we did, once we adopted the policy, was sent out to all the council, the mayors. It was sent out to both CMAP and RMAP, to the county specifically. I went directly to some of those who have asked about excess parcels in the past. So we sent this policy out to a broad group of organizations, chambers, and whatnot, different stakeholders, to try to seek some input from them. As the director said, we did put this out for a 60-day public comment period. It expired May 11th. To date, I have received 6 comments from Choose DuPage, DuPage County, Naperville Development Partnership, City of Naperville, Itasca, and Bensonville-Wooddale combined on some comments just on the annexation policy. I have been approached, as I just said, by some other communities wanting to know, hey, is it too late to give some, to provide some comments? Obviously, we'll take their feedback as it comes in. So I've been approached recently over the last couple of days to say, hey, I want to make sure I can get some thoughts on it. So, we have received 6 comments to date. Let me just give you kind of a rundown of the comments that we received. Again, this is not about action, just to kind of give you some updates. And I was happy to at least get 6 different agencies. Some of the comments were very detailed, I would say that. Some were multiple page comments. All the comments are now posted on the Tollway's website, so anybody could look at those. Like I said, we may be getting some different ones and new ones. So on the excess property policy, this is where we might have an opportunity to dispose of some excess right-of-way. This is really one of the big things that we talked about. five of the commenting agencies spoke specifically to the access policy. Comment that kind of came out through a couple of them was that we should have a step process or some form of checklist for the requesting party to follow. What this basically means is the way the policy, and I was looking back at it again, maybe it could just be written a little bit differently. What the community's concerns or the requesting party's concerns were is that they would have to expend a lot of time, money, and effort on complying with some of the policy requirements and not knowing if the parcel is even could be deemed access. We were looking for them to provide some research for some opportunities for how they would use the land, some land use planning, some economic development analyses. So they said, well, you know, that might be a little bit too onerous for us up front. Maybe we could look at it as a step process. So basically give me some feedback of whether or not this parcel could even be deemed access before asking them to do much more work. So that was, I'd say, kind of somewhat of a common theme that we heard through a few of them. One, for maybe some discussion purposes, we heard this on, I believe, at least two, maybe three different parties, is the valuation of the property. Some have said that we should consider accepting less than the fair market value or the appraised value or some form of a nominal fee for the land, especially for a public agency. The thought here is, well, you know, some, you might not, there might be some nuisance properties out there that maybe nobody would want. They really don't serve a value for anybody, so you know, why should we be seeking the appraised or fair market value on some of those properties? So is the next point here, special consideration of a property was transferred to the tollway by the state. So IDOT is acquiring some land for the Elgin O'Hare project. So one of the commenters said, you know, you shouldn't be seeking funding for any of that land that should be transferred to whomever it may be. That was one of the comments that we had. And following that, you know, any of the sales should not be profit driven, and then assuming that this land was given to us for free, we shouldn't be looking to make any profit off of our land. Then some other comments about if we do sell the land, if it's a large site that has, you know, a higher value, we should be looking at for some flexible terms or paying back the value over time as opposed to expecting somebody to pay it all up front. So maybe this this was in the context, if there's a large piece of land, if it has some economic value, let some economic development to occur to start allowing that payback over time.
Are any of the pieces large enough to use in a, like a wetlands exchange? So in some of our expansion where it's impacting wetlands, where you convert that to a bank, wetland bank, for instance?
For wetland banks, not much, because the property you're acquiring is not really conducive for something like that. You know, for the wetland banks, ideally what you like are 100-plus acre sites.
Yeah.
To get something, we don't have that much, but we do have some. Definitely, there are some sites that will be viable for some form of reuse from an economic development standpoint. There are some sites that are multiple acres, you know, 5, 6, 7 acre type sites that will have even larger, will have some definite long term utility on that. But that we do have some of the sites getting to that first point is there's some, there are some properties that are really nuisance sites for us. They're limited use for anybody.
You know, Rocco, I guess now, and if you, really if you take a look at 1, 2, 3, the top four, I, you know, at least my understanding as we came out with this proposal originally was the board was really pushing for some kind of broad authority or you know, broad spectrum allowing us to have some flexibility in dealing with these situations. And I think a lot of those top four that we've received that relate to that are ones where we do want to take into a lot of consideration. You, I mean, you just pointed out a situation where we've got a property that maybe doesn't serve benefit once we complete the construction. And so when we're assessing the value, part of that, I want to make sure that we have the authority or you know, the ability, as we're valuing that, to sit, if we held it, what's our cost to maintain it and upkeep it versus, and that should be figured into what that valuation is. Mm-hmm. I just want to kind of make sure that we continue to go down that road. And a lot of these comments, I think, go towards that. So, mm-hmm. you know, as we kind of refine this and evaluate that, you know, just keep that in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I was, you know, glad to see some of this, because, you know, we wanted to make sure that that point was definitely addressed. And so what I could say is what I think the next steps might be, as opposed to just us deciding how to address and reconcile these comments, what I thought is I would bring, I'm only dealing right now with six different entities. A couple of them are similar. Let's get together with all of them and maybe talk through what, you know.
Who commented,
yeah, and just say, okay, let's figure out what's the best way to reconcile some of this and make sure it's clear. We want to have that flexibility to do just, like I said, is, you know, dispose of some of these excess. Some of the issues that we have with those smaller parcels, though, the way it is written right now, and Joanne could correct me on this, we look for the local agencies to do the legal work, or looking for the requesting party to do the legal work, plats, legals, and all that stuff, surveys. Sometimes the cost to do that is more than the cost of the land itself, so they, you know, it's not worth it for me. So that's something that I think maybe we need to think about, or what's the best way to address that. You know, you're talking about spending maybe $3,000 or $2,000 to buy a piece of land that has very limited value. So
it's just a sliver next to it.
It's a sliver. So that's what, you know, we need to think about. Okay, well, how should we address some of these? After getting some of this, and actually prior to this, you know, we looked at, I think it was 18 different states' policies. Some states, Wisconsin in particular, if I recall, they basically categorized their land into marketable, limited marketability, or no marketability. So on these smaller pieces, they would, you know, dispose of it at a less than value cost.
Illinois doesn't do that.
We don't have that right now.
No, we have a crazy system. First of all, I don't.
I will never comment on my system. This is craziness.
I've tried to buy a piece of land as big as this in our front lawn. It was like $200,000, and I just keep it.
Right, and
that's the point. I mean, right. It's not really, there's no utility in it, right? There's no useful commercial or viable function. It's a little piece that you are responsible for.
We're maintaining it, we're cutting it, we're watering it,
right?
But they've made it so difficult to incorporate it into, you know, our plot. That it's not
and
working.
Some of that, I think, some of that may be statute driven too. I don't know how much of it. So, you know, that's something we'll have to consider.
Right.
But I think it's a good point that Rocco is making, because mm-hmm. you know, some of it's such a cumbersome, cumbersome process for us, unusable, really, portion of property.
Rocco, the classifications of marketable. I'm down to non-marketable. If we put it into the policy, would it require a change in state law?
I don't know. Again, I haven't really looked at it. I was just starting with this in the context of these comments to hear what it was. I haven't really researched that. We'll work with David and his group to see, okay, can we do this? And the way I believe they did it up in Wisconsin was just really kind of assessing, you know, by size, okay, which category is it? Maybe it's...
the key is the viability, though. They can assess it by a square foot and say that's the statute, and they come back with these numbers that just make no sense, because it's not mm-hmm. it's not a usable piece of property. It really has no value.
Joanne, do we have to? It's a toll highway act.
There's a state law.
The toll highway act and the trust indenture. Let me see if I can find my notes on that. I believe under the Toll Highway Act, we are empowered to dispose of excess property or partial interest. That's what the Toll Highway Act provides.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we go into the trust indenture, it speaks to the exact language is that the tollway may from time to time sell, exchange, or otherwise dispose of. So I think that, you know, ultimately it's going to be the board's decision. So those are certain criteria, internal criteria we can sort of address when the submittal comes to the board.
I think Joanne's done a nice job of identifying, you know, some of the things we have to look at, and I think what we would want, obviously, before we move forward with the policy is, you know, a real legal opinion, right,
mm-hmm.
of what we have the flexibility to do or not, given the, you know, the various statutes or contractual, obviously, indenture, what have you, that that encumber us. So
prior to final approval of this policy.
Right, that's right.
And you do have more flexibility with a government agency because there's ways you could dispose of the excess property to a government agency. It's for, what do we say, it shall be for appraised fair market value by exchange for other property, which a tollway may use, or on other such terms as may be recommended. So with a public entity, we've got a little bit more flexibility. You know, maybe there's some exchange or other use, or is it going to continue to use as a public purpose, which we just had a recently a disposal to Village of Lockport. It was frontage that we should have never had. It was transferred to us from IDOT, and it's going to them for use as a public park. And that was a no fee. So again, so those are the comments that we received. What my plan is to do is bring back some of these commenting entities, and if there's other comments, maybe kind of get us again together. And the reason we had so many from DuPage County and really along the O'Hare corridor is because we'll likely have some excess property through there. So we, you know, kind of really said, okay, they understand the issue. Try to prod a few others. We've got some other opportunities, some other areas. So.
That's on the top of the stack for them.
It is on
the project's ongoing, so it's more.
Right. So this is our opportunity to get things clarified now. Then we also had some comments on the annexation policy. We did, it was the all six entities who did submit comments to the committee on the annexation policy. Same type, the first comment was the same type of thing. Process is onerous. You know, maybe it should be something that's a little bit more step. Let us know if that's even viable before we go and do much more research or spend legal fees, so that you know, they have some local processes that they suggest that maybe we follow as a checklist to make it make them not have to expend any resources if it's not going to happen. So that's something that we can work on. We did have something in there. One commenting entities, or actually a couple of them, said this. They may have had the same lawyer who reviewed it. That they didn't think that, because right now our annexation policy, if you're maybe about 4 or 6 months or so ago, we did an annexation agreement with the board to the Village of Green Oaks, and we made it very clear in there that the tollway is not going to be following these local ordinances, laws, and regulations on, you know, if we do get annexed in, we just want to make it clear that we're not going to have to step and deal with their ordinances if we want to put in a toll building or things like that, to seek permits from them, whatever it may be. So this was a comment that we did receive from a few of them that, you know, they didn't like that we were going to expect this blanket exemption of local ordinances, laws, or regulations. I think that just might be some clarification that's necessary on that. They said, you know, we should at least follow state law. So that is maybe some language that we could work on. We did mention that there may be a fee structure for annexations. We talked about it a little bit with the at the last committee meeting, but we didn't say for sure if there was going to be a fee, so we left it out there, and that kind of came back as a question, well, what's the fee structure, because they were interested in what that may be. So it might just be some nominal fee if you want to be annexed in. So that's something for us to still work on. And then when both of them, they said what would be helpful for the community is to at least provide some definition or time frame of how long the process would take. Are we talking a multi-year process, like you're hearing here, or is this a 6 month process? So those were the comments that we received on the annexation policy. There's some good stuff, that's for sure, that we received back. The thought is that, again, I'll do some additional outreach, try to see if anybody else is going to submit some comments. Like I said, I did hear specifically from two other entities that they wanted to submit some comments. So we'll see if they have any other suggestions for us for consideration. Then what I'd like to do is at least engage the commenting agencies and work on reconciling those comments with them, provide some review and updates with this committee, likely in July, and then maybe anticipate an adoption of the policy in July or maybe the meeting after that.
Great. Any questions, comments? Thank you, Rocco. Christine, any further for you?
Nothing for me. Did you have any questions for us?
Yeah, I did. Just if we could get an update under unfinished business. When we had taken a look at the towing and recovery policy, and I know the staff was in the middle of working on that. If we could just give kind of an update on where we are on that.
Sure.
Sure.
I can speak to Paul if you're okay with that. As you recall, we have two portions, the recovery portion and the towing portion. The recovery is the for the large commercial vehicles, towing for more smaller, usually personal cars. One of the issues that we were working on, one of the challenges was tightening up the agreement that we've been to, spelling out some of the performance issues that we use to gauge people and the criteria. That's all been updated, more spelled out. We worked with legal and including a chart that shows what actions are taken for failure to respond to or deal with certain issues. So very clear, still with some flexibility in case we haven't thought of something, but very clear it should be. I'll put everyone on notice on the consequences on failing to do some of these things. Recovery, we've done a competitive process. We put the agreement out there. We sought additional respondees to cover all the territories of the tollway. We're nearing completion of that process. We've had some evaluators look at some objective criteria such as response time, certifications, quality of the facilities and equipment to rank those and deem all those that are eligible to participate. And then we're in the final selection process now. Towing will be soon going out with the competitive process and opening it up and allowing people to go through the process as well. So we're wrapping up, at least the recovery portion, and moving into a greater stage for the towing process. But soon expect to have all those things completed.
Great. Any questions? Thank you, Mike.
Sure.
Any new business? I show nothing for executive session. That being said, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second.
All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? We stand in adjournment.
Thank
you.
Thank you.